You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets, because it's your pet. Health matters. Please welcome your Pet Doctor host, veterinary media consultant and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
Does this sound familiar? I would love to take my dog for a walk, but it tries to attack every person and dog we meet. He's pulled me off my feet. I just don't understand. He's so good at home. Or, why is my dog jealous of my new baby? Initially, everything was okay, but now it tries to snap and run away whenever the baby approaches. Do I have to give my dog away? Or, my neighbors have reported me to the authorities because my dog whines and barks whenever I leave. Should I get my dog another dog to keep it company? These are the type of questions I get from frustrated, concerned dog parents. Why can't their dogs be more like Lassie? Is the dog being belligerent, stubborn, mean, or is it just stupid? Or could the human be at fault? Dr. Deborah Horowitz and some of her board-certified veterinary behaviorist colleagues have just released a marvelous book for all cynophilist dog lovers. Decoding Your Dog. Better understanding what's going on between your dog's ears can keep your pet out of the doghouse. We'll be right back after this short break.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Swipe It's a revolutionary new product that literally swipes away cat hair from virtually any surface. You know, most of us struggle with a roller or vacuum cleaner to clean up cat hair, but anyone who has tried either of these knows they just don't work very well. But Swipe It's patent pending glove has a magnetic-like quality that removes cat hair from almost everything. And best of all, Swipe It's is machine washable, so you can use it over and over again. To order, just visit swipeits.com. That's S-W-I-P-E-T-S. A simple solution for shedding.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Dr. Horowitz, this book is fabulous, and I feel so badly because I've been telling all my clients so many wrong things. Thank you for being on the show today.
You're welcome. I'm very excited to talk to you and help spread the gospel of decoding your dog.
There are times when people come in with behavioral issues, and I try and help out, and I realize this is beyond my expertise, so I'll recommend, you know, I need to send you to a board-certified veterinary behaviorist, and they get this look just repeatedly of, are you kidding me? A dog shrink? So who is the American College of Veterinary Behaviorists, and why did you decide to write Decoding Your Dog?
Well, first of all, everyone who's a member of the American College of Veterinary Behaviorists is a veterinarian. So not only are we schooled in veterinary medicine and all the medical problems that dogs can have, we also have advanced training in behavioral medicine, meaning that we have studied the ethology, the natural behaviors of dogs and cats and many other species, and we understand learning theory and how dogs communicate with one another. And we work to bridge the difference between how dogs look at the world and how humans look at the world, and those two things can cause problems between dogs and their owners. Most people are very far removed from their rural roots, and as you said, they think their dogs will be Lassie, which of course, Lassie was a trained TV dog that was in certain situations that actually weren't true. Our dogs that live with us day to day are unique and wonderful creatures, and we all love them, and our book is to help you understand them better so that you aren't so frustrated and they aren't so frustrated with you.
What I find so interesting, I went to veterinary school when we had electricity and running water, but it seems as though some of the information that I was taught is just wrong. When has it changed?
Well, we know so much more about dog behavior now than we did before. Back in the 40s, actually, a researcher studied some captive wolves. And during that research, what he noticed was a lot of fighting between wolves over resources, food, water, resting places, and mates. And he dubbed this as a hierarchy, a dominance hierarchy. And somehow people decided, well, dogs are descended from wolves, and we should extrapolate that to dogs. Well, fast forward into the 90s, when another researcher goes out and watches wolves that live out in the wild. And guess what? Wolves don't act that way. They live in a family unit with a mother and father wolf that are raising their offspring. And they all cooperate together so that they'll be successful, so they'll live and they'll reproduce into the next generation. They do not have a dominant hierarchy. There is no fighting that takes place in a wolf pack. So if that's not true about wolves, then it's probably not true. In fact, we know it's not true about dogs. Even more so, what we've come to realize in studying the domestic dog is they don't form packs at all. Feral dogs that live in groups do not pack up. They don't form a unit that have the same cooperative structure that wolves do. So although dogs have descended from wolves and probably retain a number of genetic characteristics that wolves do, their behavior has been changed tremendously for the better by domestication. And all that theory about being alpha to your dog and dominating your dog and punishing your dog and showing them who's boss is just not true.
I mean, people I'm sure are listening to you right now with their mouths open going, really? Maybe that's why it's not working. I think what can be so frustrating sometimes, yes, I was taught a different philosophy, and I think what they knew at the time, so I'll go with that, and we know that things are constantly evolving and changing, and thankfully for groups such as yourselves, board-certified veterinary behaviorists. But I think what also can be frustrating for people is you watch television and there are these TV personalities who can fix a dog or cat behavior, you know, in half an hour or less. And so many of the times they seem to be using intimidation. In your book, Decoding Your Dog, you talk about motivation. So what's the difference? What are we seeing on TV that maybe just isn't correct?
Well, first of all, if you've handled lots of dogs, like myself and my colleagues and maybe even TV personalities, you are very skilled at reading the dog and understanding what they're saying to you with their ears and their eyes and the rest of their face and their body and their tail and respond appropriately, almost without thinking. And in Decoding Your Dog, the very first chapter talks about, can't we just talk? And it tries to illustrate for the reader how dogs communicate with us using those body postures. And when you recognize that the dog is either frightened or has decided that, okay, I am not going to do that any longer, then you need to change your behavior. So the first thing is not to put yourself up against someone who is very skilled at working with dogs. That can be frustrating. Secondly, what is really important is to think about how we learn. What works best for us, the carrot or the stick? Well, actually, the carrot. Most of us would not go to work if we didn't get paid every day. Most of us would not stay at work if our bosses continually yelled at us and was physically abusive to us. That's not the best way for us to do our job. And the dog's job is to learn how to live in the human household. And the best way for them to learn how to do that is by showing them the right behavior and rewarding that instead of punishing what you don't want. Because all you're doing with punishment is say, stop. But it's so much easier to say, do this. And we have come a long way in the way we educate children. No longer is it, you know, spare the rod and spoil the child, because we understand that we need to show them what they need to do. And if we wouldn't do those kinds of things to our children, we certainly don't want to do them to our dogs.
Clients will come in. I was even talking to some of my technicians yesterday, owning dogs and some of the behaviors that they'll have. And for instance, you have the dog that is barking. I was talking about, you know, the barking dog. Your neighbors are complaining. You may need to move because this dog is barking. Okay, you'd say, all right, I'm not supposed to smack them. I'm not supposed to yell at them. I'm supposed to do positive reinforcement. But it's barking and it's driving me crazy and I just can't get on top of it. And I know it's normal for a dog to bark, But how do I get him to stop this and stop it yesterday?
Dogs bark for lots of reasons. So a dog that is barking when you're not home may be suffering from separation anxiety. In Decoding Your Dog, we have a whole chapter on separation anxiety that explains that for many dogs, when we leave them home alone, about somewhere between 14 to 20% of dogs suffer from separation anxiety when they're left home alone without their people. They will bark, they will whine, they can be destructive, they can eliminate, and they may not necessarily be very active. They can sit in the corner and just sort of tremble. These dogs are abnormal. They have not learned how to be separated from their people, and they're distressed. And their barking is showing us they're distressed. So the first thing we need to do when a dog is barking is get a diagnosis. Is a dog barking because they're frightened or they're worried about being left home alone? Are they barking out in your yard because one of the reasons we domesticated dogs is they alert us when people or enemies are nearby, and your dog is trying to bark people away, and when they go away, the dog says, wow, aren't they good at that? And they keep barking. So perhaps the answer to that is if you're home, then you should bring your dog inside and let your dog know, oh, I don't need you to bark everybody away. Dogs often
Thank
bark
you very much. I'll take over. Yes. So understanding why. So they're outside, they're barking. Thank you very much. You've done your job. Now come inside. I'll take over. But what do you do when you're not home and the dog is barking?
Well, if the dog is outside and you're not home, that is actually often a recipe for disaster for a number of reasons. Again, the dog could be barking outside when you're not home because they have separation anxiety. So one way to get at that would be to take a video of your dog when they're home alone, and you might see that they're actually distressed. They're not having a good time while they're barking. Secondly, dogs that are left outside when you're not home may be left outside because they're destructive inside, because, again, they have separation anxiety. And finally, dogs that are left outside when you're not home are at a risk of either escaping or some other thing happen to them when they're outdoors. So I and my colleagues often recommend that your dog really should be safely indoors when you're not going to be home.
People are listening to this going, gee, that's good, but then, you know, I'm gone for 12 hours, I have to work, and then the dog eliminates in the house, or I've tried bringing it in the house and destroys things, or I put it in a crate and it's hurt its nose or damaged its paws trying to scratch out. How do you keep a dog from ever getting the separation anxiety? Let's go to the base of that if possible.
Well, that's a really good question. We don't really know for sure the genesis of separation anxiety. Why do some dogs develop separation anxiety and some don't? It's worth speculating that probably all dogs are somewhat distressed by being separated from their people, but they don't do these extreme things like try to get out of a crate or jump through windows or destroy your house or bark or eliminate. Dogs that have separation anxiety actually need to be treated with behavior modification so they can talk how to be left home alone, and maybe with medication. So again, if your dog is barking or is destructive when you're gone, then you need to seek help from a board-certified veterinary behaviorist or even your own veterinarian to determine whether or not your dog actually has separation anxiety, because that is a specific disease process that needs intervention so that we can teach the dog how to be left home alone without being anxious. These dogs are panicked. If you watch videotapes of these dogs, they are panicked. They are clearly suffering. And so they're not trying to be bad. They're not trying to destroy your house out of spite. And they're not barking just to make people be angry. They are severely distressed, and they need intervention by a veterinarian or veterinary behaviorist.
Dr. Horowitz, it really goes along with what you were saying in the book, is that people need to learn to listen to their dogs with their eyes. We see the dog that is destroying things going, bad dog. When, as you're saying, this can be a dog that's really panicked. And medication, you alluded to, can help. But oftentimes, my clients are coming in to me saying, just give me the pill. I need to cure this. I need a tranquilizer. You know, that's going to do the trick. And that's not solely the trick, is it?
No, it is not totally the trick, because the dog, even if you could find a medication that would make the dog not move and be totally immobile and lay in your house and not do anything while you're gone, they still would be anxious inside. And what we want to do is diminish the anxiety. In order for that to happen, we need to teach them how to be left home alone. And we have some very simple tools to do that. And in the book, Decoding Your Dog, there is really a good description about interventions you can do to help your dog get better from separation anxiety. And there also are some good suggestions on ways when you bring home a new dog to teach them how to be left home alone. And that's really the crux of it. is the teacher dog, how to be left home alone without panicking, without being upset. And it's going to take a little time when you have a dog with separation anxiety. We often suggest trying to get a pet sitter or use doggy daycare until we can get some medication and some training on board to get that dog to feel better.
And does getting another dog help, or do you just have two neurotic dogs?
There is no evidence that we have found that having another dog will prevent or treat separation anxiety. Separation anxiety is a very interesting topic that we know quite a bit about because there are two medications that have been approved for use to treat dogs with separation anxiety, and they were both subjected to double-blinded placebo-controlled trials where some dogs received medication, some dogs did not. All the dogs got a minor behavior modification plan. And one of the things we discovered many things. The first thing we discovered is that all the dogs got better with behavior modification, but dogs on medication got better at a faster rate. So medication enables your dog to get better faster, but what you need is behavior modification. So that's the first thing we learned. The second thing that we learned is that these dogs live in a lot of circumstances. Some live with multiple dogs. Some are an only dog. Some live with cats. Some live with married people with children. Some live with single people. There were no particular things in the study that screamed and said, well, if you have this kind of household, you are more likely to have a dog with separation anxiety. There was one study that said single owners might be overrepresented in dogs with separation anxiety, but that's pretty hard to tease apart. We had a lot of dogs in the separation anxiety study, and we did not particularly find that to be true. So bottom line, getting another dog to help your dog with separation anxiety is not usually helpful.
I'm speaking right now with Dr. Deborah Horowitz. She is a board-certified veterinary behaviorist and co-editor from the American College of Veterinary Behaviorists book, Decoding Your Dog. We'll be right back after this short break.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Every pet is unique. Maybe they're gray in the muzzle, yet young at heart. Maybe they're growing out of the puppy stage and into their paws and ears. Or maybe they're just trying to maintain a more girlish figure. At PetSmart, we have the right food for your pet at a great value for you. PetSmart. Be better together.
Go to PetSmartDeal.com and save up to 30% on pawsome gifts for the pets and pet people in your life. Toys, collars, leashes, PetSmart gift cards, treats, and more. Go to PetSmartDeal.com today. PetSmartDeal.com.
Hi, everybody. I'm Megan Blake here with my sidekick, Super Smiley, the giant mutt and spokes dog for throwaways. You're listening to Pet Life Radio, and I'd like to tell you about our brand new show, A Super Smiley Adventure. Our show explores adventures with animals. They can be traveling, out-in-the-world trips, or inner journeys where our animals lead us to inspiration and self-discovery, or just plain, fun adventures. Join us here on Pet Life Radio on A Super Smiley Adventure. Good boy.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Dr. Horowitz, you mentioned something right before the break about that single pet owner. And there are times you have a dog, you're single. That dog is your life. You do everything together. It sleeps in bed with you. Life is just wonderful. And then, oh, you meet a human who starts coming into the home, now becomes the significant other. You're going to start sharing your bed with this person, and the dog is going to have nothing to do with this. It starts growling, snapping. How do you get over that one?
Well, dogs and people do get very attached to one another, and a great majority of dogs accept a new person in their life just fine. Sometimes we do have dogs that have had limited exposure to other people, and that may be more of a problem than whether or not they accept that person or are jealous of that person, what people often say. So if they're not used to having their routine altered by another person sleeping in the bed or different coming and goings from the house, different meal times, different scheduling, they may become anxious. What we do know about dogs, and in the chapter in the book, Decoding Your Dog, about aggression, do dogs mean to be mean? The authors really point out to the fact that most dogs who are aggressive are either defending themselves or they're anxious about something. When dogs are anxious, they don't have very many ways to say, I don't like that. I'm really nervous. And what they primarily might want to do is escape. So back to your example about bringing a new significant other into the house. The significant other may want to make friends with the dog and overwhelm that dog. Try to pick it up, try to hug it too much, try to interact with it. The dog says, you know, let's go a little slower here. I don't really know you. Kind of like if one of us brought a significant other into our extended family. If our extended family rushed up and hugged them and kissed them and said, now tell me the most intimate details of your life. They may go, wait a minute. Too much. Too soon. And so for some dogs, we need a slower approach. We need to keep the routine the same. We need to transition slowly from the initial single owner giving all the commands, doing all the feeding, to gradually sharing that interaction and letting the dog dictate the pace of things. Maybe the dog doesn't want to go for a walk with a new person just yet, so you walk together. And maybe when you walk together, the new person holds the leash. And maybe when the new person's holding the leash, oh, you've got wonderful treats in your pocket and my owner does not? Well, you're my new best friend. So we just gradually have to show the dog that change is okay. Remember, nobody likes change unless it's their idea. And bringing a new person into the house isn't usually the dog's idea.
How about bringing in that new baby? All of a sudden, you were the firstborn child. You were the apple of your owner's eye. And then they have the audacity to have a human child. It's now the little prince or princess, and you're delegated to the dog bed. What can people do to prepare their dog to have that new child in the family?
What a great question, Bernadine, because many people have a pet first and then have children, and they wonder what they should do. Again, we do have a whole chapter in Decoding Your Dog on children and dogs and bringing a dog into your family or bringing a child into your family when you already have a dog. The important thing to understand is that dogs can cope with change, but they have expectations about how things are going to be. If a dog was never raised with any children, then they may not want to be held onto by children and squeezed by children and pursued by children who are crawling after them. And they will do the dog way of saying, leave me alone, which is growling and stamping, which is so dangerous to the new baby. We don't want that to happen. We need to step back and go back to chapter one and recognize that the dog is looking fearful and anxious and then give the dog a safe place. One of the things we come back to, two things we come back to over and over in the book. The first is understanding what your dog is saying to you by looking at them and watching them. And the second is make sure you always have their back. If you're going to make a change with a new baby or a new significant other, make sure your dog has a safe place where they can go, where no one's going to bother them. And good things happen there, whether it's a calm toy stuffed with peanut butter, whether it's a playtime and then they rest in their special spot. But make sure that they don't have to be there if they don't want to. And oftentimes when there's a new baby around, the dog would rather be somewhere else but doesn't know to go somewhere else because after all, they're just a dog. So we need to help them understand that transition, and many dogs will do just fine with the change in activity and circumstance if we plan ahead and we allow them that space to be alone and be safe.
The smells, the sounds, you know, all of that is so different. And I know in Decoding Your Dog, the book, it even mentions some websites, places you can go to get baby sounds. Or if you have somebody,
right.
I'll usually recommend if you have friends with children, you know, bring them over so at a safe distance that dog can hear a baby cry and going, okay, that's an interesting sound. I'm not sure if I really like that. And just desensitize them. You have 9 months, you know, as you're planning
yes,
this baby
do.
Coming into the house. Plan ahead.
That is great advice to plan ahead. The other thing, too, is that oftentimes the dogs aren't actually bothered by those kinds of things. So what is important is for the humans to be calm. But let's face it, when you bring home a new baby, you're not necessarily calm. And so you get anxious, and the dog, who is well tuned into the owner, gets anxious and doesn't realize that they don't need to be. So one of the things that we talk about, besides all the things you mentioned, which are just perfect, is to teach the dog how to be calm, how to go again to their safe place and be calm on their bed. So that when you're walking the baby at 3 in the morning and the dog thinks that they've got to follow you, you can say, Fido, go to your bed. Everything's okay. Go to your bed and settle down. And the dog says, I know how to do that. I did that before. You don't need me, my special person. Okay, I can go back to sleep.
And that really decreases the anxiety for the owner, because now you have the baby and the dog is running after you and it's going, it's like, oh, really?
This idea of a safe haven and teaching the dogs to go to a place and relax is so powerful from the very beginning of when you get your dog, that you say to your dog, this is your safe place, and when I tell you to go there, good things happen to you and bad things are not going to happen to you there. And if they recognize that, and you can send them there on a verbal command. So many people tell us in our behavior practices, oh yeah, my dog goes to his bed by himself. He knows how to settle down. Ah, but you don't have it under verbal command. The way we talk to our dogs is through training. And the more things that we train that we can tell them to do based on a verbal command, the better off we are. So yes, the dog might go to their dog bed when they want to rest because it's comfy. But if we can send them to the dog bed and have them stay there and be relaxed, think how much further ahead we will be. And that is so important. That's one of the other key issues, is learn to talk to your dog by training them to do so many things you need them to do. We have a whole chapter on house training. I don't know if you want to talk about that or not, but there's so much we can train them by teaching them to go potty on command.
Training is so important. And Dr. Horace, I think sometimes people are afraid that if I train my dog, I'm breaking their spirit. They need to be dogs. They need to be able to express themselves. So, you know, if I have this bouncy, happy Jack Russell Terrier, if I get it controlled so it's a little automaton, it's not that dog anymore.
Well, training doesn't mean that your dog is an automaton. Training means that you can talk to your dog about what you want it to do. So what we tell people is training is the communication tool we have between dogs. If you like your dog to bounce up and down when you come home, you can teach him to be happy to see you and bounce up and down when you come home, right? But it's under verbal control. So if you come home and your Jack Russell Terrier's name is Fred, and you say, okay, Fred, jumpy, 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 and the dog jumps up and down and barks and you're happy, then when company comes over, if you don't say jumpy, 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 then Fred says, oh, I'm not supposed to do this type of greeting for people, only for people who tell me jumpy, jumpy, jumpy. So the point is, everything you want your dog to do, whether it's high excitement, lots of fun, or it's being calm and quiet, just train him, put it under verbal control so that you're talking to one another in a language you both understand. You can train your dogs to do all kinds of silly things. There's a whole, I don't know if you've seen the compilation of videos on the internet about dogs and cats playing dead when you go bang. They're hysterical. I mean, the dogs do all sorts of different ways of dying, which I hope won't upset your listeners. But, you know, some dogs flip over really fast and some, like, go down really slow. And some of the cats just sort of, like, melt. And it's all the training. You can teach your dogs to do anything, and training's not a negative thing. Training your dog to perform commands is like teaching your child to read or speak. It means they can communicate with the world around them. And what we want in decoding your dog is so you and your dog can communicate clearly, efficiently, and in the right way, so you can have the best bond with your dog ever. And that all comes from talking to one another, just like it comes from people talking to each other.
In decoding your dog, you talk about how to find the perfect dog. There's not the perfect spouse. There's not the perfect friend. There's not the perfect dog. And I think we set ourselves up, you know, Lassie on TV or movies, in that just spectacular husband or wife that's out there. It's like, it doesn't happen. But are there ways to optimize a chance that you will get a dog that's best suited to your family?
Well, in the chapter on choosing your new best friend, we talk about the fact that your dog doesn't have to be perfect. It has to be perfect for you. And that's the key. if you want a dog that is very outgoing and likes to be with people and go everywhere with you, then you can work within that dog's personality and genetic temperament to teach them to be hopefully outgoing and relaxed and flexible and do all the things you want. On the other hand, we do have to realize that like people, dogs come with their own innate temperament and personality, and they may not want to do everything you want them to do. And back to what we talked about before and having your dog's back, it's important to realize that just because you want to do something doesn't mean your dog wants to do it. So you may want to have a dog that goes to the coffee shop and the dog park and travels all over the world with you. Your dog may be a couch potato who would rather sit at home and just see the same three people and the two dogs they like all the time. And in order for it to be the perfect match, everybody's got to give a little. So we can teach the dog to maybe go more places, but then we as their owners need to adjust our expectations so they're comfortable and happy.
So we have to have realistic expectations. Every dog is a little different, just like we are.
That's true. Realistic expectations for our dogs and reading them well to understand when they're telling us, I don't like this. As a veterinary behaviorist, I've seen thousands of cases. And in dogs that are normal but haven't learned how to cope with other situations, we can often teach them to accept many situations that they wouldn't have been in before. And it's a very small number of dogs who are truly abnormal or have had abnormal experiences when they were young that didn't prepare them for a wide range of experiences that make it a little bit harder. But if we are patient and we understand learning principles and we teach our dogs the right things and we respect their ability to say no, we can have really fulfilling lives with our dogs.
Dr. Horwitz, I have a question that people have asked me. I've seen it in my own small dog, and I don't have an answer for. You have, typically it seems to be a small dog who's been eating out of a certain type of bowl forever. And then one morning it looks at that bowl, is like, it's going to eat me, and it won't get near it. And you have to either hand feed it or feed it off the floor or something. But it seems like little dogs get this phobia about feeding bowls. Have you seen it?
Actually, that is not something that we see referred in behavioral practices. If a dog really suddenly has a fear or a phobia of a object or a place or a sound or something like that, really the first thing that we would look at as veterinary behaviorists is whether or not there's a medical reason for that sudden change. When we see patients whose owners tell us he suddenly became like this, when we take them backwards through time and ask them to describe certain things to us, and this is one of the skills that veterinary behaviorists have because it's what we do, it becomes apparent that actually it's been building for some time, but it wasn't really easily recognizable to the owner because they didn't know what to look for. So I would say that some of these dogs that develop what appears to be a phobia to the food bowl either have a medical problem or it's been coming for some time and the owner was not aware that the dog was experiencing a change in the way they wanted to eat or how they want to eat out of their bowl. And it would take some digging to figure that out. But it isn't something commonly that we see in behavior practice, actually.
And it's so wonderful about having a veterinarian who is actually a behaviorist who can then say, ah, this has a medical component versus a trainer who is the come, sit, stay type of a person. Last question for you, and we could go on. Every chapter can be a whole show. But last question for you, you being a board-certified veterinary behaviorist and the American College of Veterinary Behaviorists coming up with this book, Decoding Your Dog, has just been spectacular. Are you coming up with a cat book?
Well, we hope so.
Good.
We hope if this is well-received that the publisher or a different publisher would see the value in a readable book that's based on science. You mentioned a couple of things that are really important to us. Medical health and behavioral health are tied together. So as veterinary behaviorists, we are able to look at the animal and assess whether there's a medical contribution to the behavior problem, or is it a pure behavioral problem, or is it both? And we think we bring that special expertise and the science that we know, the studies that we've done, and we hope that in this book, which we think is pretty readable considering it was written by some board certified veterinarians.
It's extremely readable, very enjoyable.
Now, good, that people are going to be able to take their relationship with their dog to the next level, and certainly we would love to have the opportunity to do that again with cats. And I think the proof of the pudding will be in the sales of the book. There are so many dog owners, and if it really gets a great response, then we know as a college that the desire is out there for the information that we can provide. It takes a long time to make something like this come to fruition, and it's been a long road, but we're so excited, and the buzz about the book, the response from veterinarians and pet owners has been outstanding, and I really appreciate this opportunity to talk to your audience about this book because it's very close to my heart. I spent 2 really intimate years with this book along with Dr. John Firabassi. I have to give a big shout out to him and Steve Dale. We really, really worked with our authors to create a book that is going to take your dog ownership to the next level.
Well, if you own a dog, if you have a friend with a dog, purchase Decoding Your Dog by the American College of Veterinary Behaviorists, Dr. Deborah Horowitz, my colleague today here on the show, a diplomate of the American College of Veterinary Behaviorists, or if you have a veterinarian who you think could maybe go up that learning curve. I know I'm learning a lot from this book. Give them a present. So thank you so much for listening today. If you have any questions about what you want to know about your pet, cat, dog, bird, fish, whatever, please drop me a line at Pet Life Radio. I'll try to address it. And please listen next week. We'll have more information on how to make you the best possible pet owner. Thanks for listening. Take care.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life because they're a member of the family. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.